We hear a lot about endangered species these days, as well we should. That's because some of the world's most iconic creatures are on the brink of extinction. But our focus on tigers and elephants and polar bears can sometimes keep us from seeing a bigger picture that's even more troubling. Wildlife populations overall are in big trouble, just about everywhere. And a report out today puts a jarring number on that decline. 50%. That's how much the populations of roughly 10,000 representative animals have fallen over the last four decades. Kea Chatterjee is with the World Wildlife Fund in Washington. A decline by a factor of two. That's not good to hear. How were you able to actually measure this?
Well, what we did is we looked at populations of these 10,000 vertebrate species. So we looked at the available data and we compiled that. But the report, the Living Planet report, actually also measures two other really important factors. The second is the human ecological footprint, which is a measure of the consumption of goods and greenhouse gas pollution we produce. And the third is the biocapacity of the Earth, which is the amount of natural resources for producing food and fresh water and sequestering carbon that we had. And bringing those three data sets together is what gives us this full picture of what's happening on the planet. And as you said, it's tragic. We are losing half of our wildlife. And that's happening in the same time period when the human population has nearly doubled. So from 1970 to today, we've gone from 3.7 billion to around 7 billion in human population. And while the number of animals have been cut in half, we have nearly doubled in our population.
So let me get this right. You're linking the decline of these species to the human causes. Does that mean this is going to continue as long as humans are causing these problems that you mentioned?
Absolutely. There's nothing inevitable about these trends, but if we continue to make the choices that we are making, this is what will continue to occur because our demands on the planet are unsustainable right now. And so what we calculated in this report was that at our current rate of consumption and emissions, we would need 1.5 Earths to meet the demands of humanity. So if you can just picture, you know, we're cutting down trees faster than trees can grow. We're taking fish from the oceans faster than those populations can restore themselves. We're burning fossil fuels and putting CO2 in the atmosphere faster than the oceans and the forests can take it out. And we're doing it at a rate that's 1.5 times what would be sustainable as a global average. It's even worse if you just look at the United States, for example.
All right. So logging, overfishing, and burning fossil fuels, those are the obvious causes. I think we all kind of consider those at some point or another. But what about stuff that we don't think about? I mean, some causes that are bringing down this animal population that just, you know, might happen on a daily basis. We're not even aware of it.
Well, one thing that I think people don't think about as much is food and food waste. And so in many ways, in high-income countries, we're actually exporting, we're outsourcing resource depletion. And one of those ways is by wasting our food and overconsuming. So in this country, in the United States, where I'm sitting, we actually throw away 1/3 to 1/2 of the food that we purchase in our homes and in restaurants. And what that means is that food that is grown elsewhere, many times, where we've had massive deforestation in order to grow that food, it's getting exported here, not even for our consumption, but for us to throw it away. And so even just trying to think about what are the ways in our lives we can end that food waste is really important. Like for me personally, it works really well to have a sign in my fridge that says, eat now. And that's the shelf where I put everything that needs to be eaten in the next 48 hours. For me, a big one is not to go to the grocery store when I'm hungry. Just eat something before I go so that I'm being rational and planning for the week rather than letting my eyes be bigger than my stomach.
As you crunch the numbers for this, what kinds of animals were you actually looking at? And can we assume the same trends will apply to other kinds of animals?
Yeah. So, for example, you know, we almost a 40% decline in both terrestrial and marine species. Some of these are really iconic species that World Wildlife Fund has been working on for a long time. So African lions, Asian forest elephants are declining dramatically. In the marine realm, species of sharks and rays are in trouble. The leatherback turtle, dolphins, seals, you know, these are some of the most iconic species where we're seeing declines. And of course, there are bright spots as well. You know, for example, in Nepal, where we see that that tiger populations have rebounded after increased enforcement in protected area. That's a good trend. But the overwhelming trend is of losing animals.
You know, poor countries around the globe are pushing hard to exploit resources, get money, be players in the global economy. And that is obviously going to apply pressure on all of these animals. How do you resolve that?
Well, the larger dynamic right now is actually that high-income countries are using more. And I think to the extent that we in high-income countries can decouple our economic growth from pollution, that example is going to be followed. Right now in high-income countries, we are using 5 times the ecological resources of low-income countries. And low-income countries are suffering the greatest ecosystem losses. So we're outsourcing this resource depletion. And if you take one example like fisheries, where globally fisheries provide about 15% of protein in human diets. But if you were to take one, for example, coastal community in Africa, where that's their entire food source and it's starting to decline, that's huge for them. But they didn't burn the fossil fuels that are causing ocean acidification. They aren't causing climate change, which is causing the oceans to warm. They're not in these big ships that are overfishing the ocean. They're in small artisanal fisheries. And so they're really suffering. And there's a fundamental justice component when you think of the haves and have-nots in the context of natural capital and the space we have on this planet to support life.
So you're saying that leads me again to whenever I think about this stuff, that the answer everywhere has to be less growth, fewer people and companies making less stuff. I mean, is that going to happen? Will that actually become a trend that will push back on this horrible trend of animals disappearing?
What we want to see is economic growth occurring, but occurring without pollution. And that decoupling of economic growth and pollution is already starting to happen. There's no reason that economic growth has to be based on the burning of fossil fuels to provide electricity, for example. We've actually gotten to the point that it's cheaper to use electricity from solar and wind sources in many, many places and in a growing number of places. And so you look at countries like Germany that are solar leaders, that's the direction that we need to go, where we have economic growth, but it's using technologies that don't create pollution. We can do the same in transportation, in electricity, and we can have more efficient ways of producing food as well.
There are mentions of several bright spots in your report, and one of them, surprisingly, was the Virunga National Park in Congo, which I don't really think of as a bright spot. What's happening there?
So Virunga National Park is the oldest national park in Africa, home to mountain gorillas. And what has happened is that through a major campaign where we had major amounts of public engagement and the public weighing in, we were able to stop, at least for now, the drilling for oil in this national park where this population of gorillas exists. And really what that campaign was about was all about World Wildlife Fund members, supporters all over the world weighing in and raising their voices and saying this is completely unacceptable, telling governments it was unacceptable, and also directly targeting the companies themselves and saying this is not a good use of our resources to be extracting oil from the oldest national park in Africa.
Well, that's an impressive statement. Kia, let me ask you a personal question. I see on your WWF bio that you also write for the website mothering.com. How does this whole issue touch you as a mother?
Well, it's for me really my source of inspiration. Like when I think about why we need to tackle these issues, I think about my son in that context. And I think about, you know, if we don't have these ecosystem services, if we don't have this natural capital, if we don't tackle the climate crisis, there is no life on Earth. And that directly impacts my child. You know, before having a child, it was easy for me to read about, you know, with what we call in the climate community mid-century projections. But now, all I can think of is like, that's when my son is 40, and that's a result of the way that we're using planetary resources, and that has to change. And for me, it's a core part of parenting. It's a core part of my responsibility as a parent to tackle this on every front.
Kea Chatterjee, Director of Renewable Energy and Footprint Outreach for the World Wildlife Fund in Washington. We've been speaking with her about the WWF's new Living Planet Report on the state of wildlife around the world. Kea, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.